Liz Ebert-Crispert. Liz is head of Bank of America's Institute, the Bank of America Institute. And Liz joins us, GMI Studios, on this Wednesday morning from Bank of America. Liz, thanks for being with us.
Well, good morning. It's great to be here. Thanks for inviting me on.
Always a pleasure. Tell me, tell us about Bank of America Institute, and which I think launched in the last year or so.
We did. We launched about 54 weeks ago, so just about a year ago. And we're really a think tank within Bank of America that we launched because we recognized that we were sitting on a treasure trove of data that we could leverage to really uncover some unique insights. And just as you were saying, it's not just insights we want to share with our clients and our customers, but we want to share these with the public, with policymakers, with communities, to help everybody really make more informed and better decisions. Bank of America has almost 68 million consumer and small business clients. Last year alone, $4.2 trillion of payments went through our bank. So that's 50 times the size of New Hampshire's economy, or more than three times New England. So you'd be really hard-pressed to find a group with a more robust data set, and it's pretty powerful. And so by looking at this data, and of course we do this in an aggregated and anonymized manner, but in looking at this data, we can uncover some pretty interesting things, and we can do it oftentimes faster or more right. real time than some of the metrics that are published by, you know, the government, for example. And as you pointed out, the best part about this is that all of our insights, our publications, are available for free to anybody at bankofamerica.com/institute.
Liz, with Bank of America Institute, you don't have to comment on this, but I noticed in the last few months when banks became news in California and other banks because of some questions, I noticed you were like a battleship in the sea of calmness. Bank of America is where a lot of people and a lot of investors ran to find a safe haven and a steady helmet the ship or a steady helm. What trends, Liz, with Bank of America Institute, what trends are you seeing in terms of the data? What trends are showing up?
Yeah, sure. So each month we look at, in what we call the consumer checkpoint, how the American consumer is doing. And you'll remember, you know, throughout all of last year, there were a lot of headlines, mostly based on surveys, that sounded quite alarming, that effectively said that the U.S. consumer was in deep trouble. But when we looked at our data, again, not basing it on a survey of what people say they're doing, but on the data of what our 68 million clients were actually doing, we were seeing a different story. And in fact, the story that we saw from our data was that the consumer was quite resilient. You know, they had a battleship, right? They were increasing their spending on their debit and credit cards. Their incomes were going up, either through pay hikes, bonuses, they maybe had switched jobs and gotten a raise, or because of things like the Social Security cost of living adjustment, which not only helped retirees, but also raised veterans benefits by almost 9%. So our data was really consistent in pointing to a resilient consumer. Again, despite what we might have been reading in the newspapers, throughout all of 2022 and into the beginning of this year, but in the middle of February, we started to see consumers slow down, and in March, card spending was barely positive. It was up 0.1%, so really it was flat, right? And slowest pace in about 2 years, so something to acknowledge. But on the other hand, we don't just look at card spending. And when we look at the other payment methods like ACH and wire transfers, that those larger ticket items are often done through those other payment systems, and the data there is actually showing that the payments are continuing to grow. The bad news, though, is if you think about what people use ACH and wire payments for, oftentimes it's things like rent or debt repayment, things you don't put on a card. Those are necessities. So some of that strength and growth there isn't because of strong consumer demand. It's actually because of rising prices and higher interest rates.
Liz Ebert, Crisberg is head of Bank of America Institute. Liz, are inflation and higher interest rates really the reason or to blame for the slowdown, you think, or not, from the data in consumer card spending?
I think they're a factor. You know, if you're paying more for necessities, you've got less to spend elsewhere. But there are two other explanations in our data for the slowdown in card spending. One is wages, and two is taxes, specifically tax refunds. So first on the wages, I mentioned before that through last year, we saw wage growth really continue to grow. But in March, our data showed that that income growth also was beginning to moderate, up just 2%. So far cry from the 8% growth we saw in April of last year. Still growing, but slowing down. And that's across all income levels. But interestingly, for the highest income households, so those households making more than $150,000 a year, income isn't just slowing down. That group actually saw a contraction in their wages, down about 0.5%. So their income is declining. So, you know, that's something to note. The second thing we found is having an impact on card spending in March had to do with tax refunds. The IRS puts out data that had showed that the average refund size was tracking down about 10% versus last year, which makes sense because, you know, last year many Americans took their third stimulus payment in the form of a tax credit. The enhanced child tax credit expired this year. So it would make sense that refunds would be down. But what the IRS doesn't tell you, but the Bank of America Institute data can, is that average 10% decline in tax refunds is not consistent across income groups. The lowest income households, so those making less than $50,000 in annual income, they are seeing an even bigger contraction, while higher income households actually saw average refunds increase by 5%. So inflation and higher interest rates, along with slower wage growth and lower tax refunds, that's what's contributing.
Liz, the Federal Reserve, and I'm not going to get into Fed policy because I think they waited too long to adjust rates up. I think inflation was not transitory. I still think we're dealing with it. Consumer confidence in the consumers still drives, believe it or not, and I think you'd agree with this, the data would show it, the American economy. So in other words, consumer spending, consumer confidence, consumer demand still is very important, as we know. I know. I think. You can correct me if I'm wrong. How concerned should we be, Liz, about the U.S. consumer at this point going forward?
No, you're absolutely right. But even as the economy is slowing, what our data shows that gives me a little bit of confidence is that the consumer's fundamentals are still okay, particularly because across all income levels, consumers still have financial buffers in the form of availability of credit and deposits. So just looking at credit availability to start, think about credit card utilization rates. You know, what percentage of your credit limit are you using? And if we compare what people are using today versus what they were using before the pandemic, they're actually below that by about 3 percentage points. The other thing we don't see is we don't see people reaching for their credit card instead of paying with their debit card, which you would expect to see if a consumer was really being squeezed. And I think part of that is also because consumers still have money in the bank, right? If we look at deposits, how much money they have in their checking and their savings accounts, those numbers also look really strong, particularly compared to pre-pandemic. You know, our data shows that the consumer's median deposit balances are significantly, in some cases, more than 50% higher than they were before the pandemic, and this is especially true for the lowest income households. So they've got a buffer to help them weather the storm if, in fact, one's coming.
Liz, before we let you go, and again, Liz heads up the Bank of America Institute, about a year old now. Liz, J-Dog, who's on the show with me now, he's on the younger side of things, if you will, and he has some buddies that are part of this, what they call the gig economy. For example, people who drive for some of the rideshare services to make some extra money, like Uber or Lyft or grocery stores or grocery food delivery services like DoorDash now. You see a lot of people picking this up. But you published something yesterday about the gig economy, and I guess the question is, has it peaked or is this still evolving, developing, growing? Where do you see this?
Well, our data, you know, is indicating it maybe it peaked. A lot of discussion last year, Americans were leaving the traditional job force. They were going to work as gig workers. And what we saw was the share of Bank of America customers who got some income from gig work, although small, had really been rising steadily and saw a threefold increase during the pandemic. But what we published just yesterday has showing those numbers slip by about 20% in less than a year. And the question is, are consumers no longer using the services or did the workers get other jobs? And the answer is both. Fewer restaurant takeout and grocery delivery orders as the economy's reopened and people are eating out again and doing their own grocery shopping, so you don't need as many people to deliver it. But importantly also, those gig workers who also hold traditional jobs are more likely to work in the retail and restaurant sectors, and those two sectors saw big wage increases over the past 2 years. So we think some of those workers may no longer need to supplement their incomes with gig work because of those wage increases, and also workers who may have just been doing gig work may be attracted by some of those higher salaries into the job market. So interesting stuff to think about, all driven by the data, and all data and insights we're happy to share with everybody.
Well, I'm glad the public can benefit from Bank of America's Institute. Liz, thank you so much for putting the spotlight on data. Thank you very much, Liz.
Have a great day.